Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
In the 2020 election cycle, a total of $14 billion was spent on campaign-related expenditures. The Dems spent roughly $7 billion, which exceeded the $6.5 billion spent during all of 2016. To put this number in perspective, the Dems could have mailed stimulus checks for $600, which appears to be the amount currently being debated in Congress, to a little under 12 million individuals. If given a set of campaign resources, what's the best way to maximize outcomes? The main premise is resource allocation. Do you have the resources to proactively message, or should you try and force the opposition to waste their resources? We'll discuss where the Dems went wrong and use the lessons to define a framework for local electoralism. If you had $7 billion to run a campaign, like the Dems did, what should they have done?
What should have happened this year? Because I'm thinking to myself, what would I do with $7 billion? And part of the concern and freakout that I have, some of the issues, is that there seems to be a lot of money being spent at the national level that doesn't actually trickle down to anything important at the local level. And to me, that disconnect is the reason why there's always some weird stalemate at, you know, the national level, right? That Biden can't get to 68,000%, you know, in the Senate because he can't actually translate the amount of quote unquote energy he has at the national level to something at the local level. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about, you know, spending $7 billion, and it's essentially a handout from your pocket to media. There's no question about it. It is a giant grift to convince you that your $5 that you donate is going to help the campaign somehow, when really all it's doing is buying airtime on essentially the national, you know, level of news and other things. So just keep that in mind next time you want to donate. But in the context of what I would do in a campaign, $1 billion, I don't know, eat lobster? I don't know, what would you do?
Well, first of all, I would donate to as many Dems as possible that have a campaign match going on, because I want to be sure that $1 I spend is matched by like $5 from anonymous donors.
From anonymous donors, which is basically like giant corporate VPs who've just basically bought the Democratic Party.
I'll only donate if my dollars are matched at least 3-1. Otherwise, I think I'm wasting my money.
I would say that's how you invest, my friend, is that way. It's like buying gold. I'm only going to buy gold, you know, if I can buy francs, because they're already made into coins. And sure, it takes 17 years to get my money back, but, you know, it's what I should do, buy gold.
It's worth it in the long run.
Yeah, it's really more of a side hustle for me.
That's how large corporations view donors and donating is. I can invest a little bit now. That means I got to provide a match to all the poor people that are donating to their favorite neoliberal candidate. That means I'll write a little bit bigger check, but that's okay. Because in the long run, I'll get favorable treatment, right?
Absolutely. Like, you get things like Peter Butterbread, you know, terrible neoliberal who worked basically a CIA operative who's going to now be a plant as transportation secretary, right? You have billionaires who just magically somehow, because I guess they don't speak French, become French ambassadors.
But I think he played with Hot Wheels on one of those rugs that has like a city street on it though, right?
Yeah. Like, if some of these people, you know, they're not drooling on themselves. They're pretty much the best candidate we have.
So you could have actually spent your money to get a qualified transportation secretary if you had $7 billion?
So if I had $7 billion, what am I doing? Number one, I'm attacking 100% of the time, all the time. And this is the main difference, I think, between, you know, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. The Republican Party is relentless on attacks. And the Democrats live in this perverted idea that if they're just nice to people and, you know, don't fart in the elevator, that people will, for some reason, vote for them. I don't know that, because the Republican Party has basically tore down Hillary Clinton for 14 years. And she couldn't even make headway with any candidates, you know, in anybody. So, I mean, I'm only nothing but attack.
So this is on the continuum of, do you attack or do you defend?
Yep.
Where attacking is you tear down Hillary Clinton for 14 years, and defending is in some way, shape, or form trying to justify your history of voting or something like that.
Yes. Yep.
The Dems attacking their opposition would look something like, well, the Republicans give tax breaks to corporations. How does that help you?
That's a good attack. That's a truthful, honest statement, right?
It is. And the Republicans will never even attempt to defend this statement, because they objectively know it's true and correct, and that's their intention. but they'll turn around and attack, and project and attempt to defer any culpability for anything to not them. So good for them. They attack better. If you're the Dems, defending your record might look something like this. Obamacare increased the number of insured Americans. And this is horrible, terrible, neoliberal messaging, but you're at least defending something that you did.
Right. Yep.
You will never see the Republicans do this.
The good example, I mean, in the Obamacare, and it's a really good example, it's the confusion of what a pre-existing condition is. The Dems actually opened this up a little bit this year and used the crisis of COVID to bring out what that really means. It means if you've been diagnosed with something beforehand, they can use it as a reason not to treat you. And that is actually a scary thing. Did Obamacare help you with this? No, not really. I mean, because your premiums just went up to cover everybody that had pre-existing conditions who need insurance. It's one of those times when neoliberalism gets the idea right, but because it's neoliberalism, it is completely fucking wrong. It is just the wrong take to have. And what the Republicans do, they go back in their heels a little bit and they say, we're working on it. We're attempting to fix this. No, you're not going to lose pre-existing conditions, yada, yada, yada. They had no plan for it because really the only real plan is that you have to have, you know, I don't know, a single payer system in which government provides health insurance. And I don't even call it insurance because insurance implies that there's some tragedy. Health care in which you have more than just, you know, catastrophic failure, right? More than just you cut your thumb off and you can be seen without, you know, paying money for it. You need that holistic care. So the Republicans will say, you know, oh, we're working on the Democrats who are neoliberals saying, oh, we have these cool policies, but in the end, they're pieces of shit.
So the other continuum that we're going to talk about is this idea of centrally planning or having unified messaging that plays out nationally or disconnected messaging that is targeted towards isolated local areas. So again, with the healthcare example, we have the Dems. If they actually cared about healthcare, they would run national messaging, something like this. Access to affordable healthcare should be available to every American. So you have your boy John Ossoff in the Georgia Senate runoff saying healthcare is a human right, but then at the same time saying, but I don't support Medicare for all. So that's an example of national messaging. It's terrible messaging, but it's national messaging. Whereas a very basic example of local messaging would be something like, hey, Flint, you guys should have clean water. You're targeting what your entire party's message is in an isolated area because 99.9% of the country does not give a shit, as evidenced by the fact that Flint still does not have clean water.
Yep.
About people having access to clean water.
Yeah, and you know, you can talk about, if you want to, the difference between the national messaging versus targeting messaging when it comes to blocking uniform steps. So one of the examples, again, Flint water is, that's a environmental issue. So you can have a environmental national policy, we want to make the world greener. And then you can micro-target pretty much every state in the United States, everywhere, because everything has an issue. You can go to West Virginia and say we have coal issues, coal dump balls, right? You can go to California and say we're having the driest history of Earth ever because of climate change. You have all this micro-targeting, but it's still centrally planned in a way that allows you to take your resources, pay for one large budget, and bang the stuff out instead of wasting resources on small little, I don't know how to say it, like national target means nothing to nobody. Like, it doesn't mean anything to say the wildfires are bad in California and all the way over in Maine because they don't care about it. So essentially planned, not disconnected. I've always had that issue with not having a coordinated campaign.
So it's not good enough to say we should care about the environment because everybody in all 50 states just goes, wah, wah, that's just political speak. There's no action accompanying it.
Yeah, it means nothing. It's platitudes.
Right.
It's saying we need to have, you know, better national mileage per gallon in cars, but why?
There's two components to this in some fashion, which is what is your actual messaging? And your actual messaging nationwide could be we should care about the environment. And then the way in which you roll that out could be local.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just about we care about the environment. It's we care about the environment. Here's what you plan to do about it. And here's how the local dickhead is going to help you out. In the case of this, we care about the environment, so we're going to increase environmental regulations. That's the goal, right? So we're going to reduce mining. How does that help you? Well, in West Virginia, they run ads that say coal mining has basically destroyed your environment here, and we need to increase regulations to stop that. Now, at the same time, it's going to be, oh, you're killing jobs, but, you know, attack, you basically drown that out.
Rod and Todd are in the background growing, my lungs hurt.
Yeah, you're taking my job.
So now that you understand the different messaging concepts, the messaging difficulty here with a national messaging versus a local messaging is still a problem that the Dems absolutely struggle with and why they basically just lit on fire $70 billion. Because you have Joe Biden, the DNC, the national campaign out there saying stupid shit like, we have to fight for the soul of our nation, which number one doesn't mean anything. And number two, there's no actual messaging attached with it that affects anybody in any local capacity.
If you talk about the soul of the nation, like what, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, under Obama, I mean, you're still bombing brown kids in the Middle East. You're still putting brown kids in cages. I mean, the soul of the nation for me does not mean anything positive, because pick a time in history that the United States was, you know, not violent towards other groups of people. And it's really hard to find where that soul of the nation exists.
Having the central plank of the national messaging advocate for the continued history of exploitation doesn't really help anybody down ticket. So if you're local and you don't have $7 billion, what can you do with these messaging tools? So the underlying problem is that you don't have money. You don't have enough infrastructure to essentially plan your messaging or micro-target or focus group or pay capital to just mash propaganda down somebody's throat. You don't have any power that even needs to be defended. So why would you even defend anything, because you have nothing to defend? So it leads to your best option being to attack because you have nothing to defend. And it leads to your best message of delivery being locally because you don't have the ability to centrally plan anything.
Absolutely. We are always talking about what you can do to get local, get active locally. You know, it's try to join a group at the city council, like your plan, urban planning or something. Join a local environmental group, join any local group. And really what it means is you have to engage your neighbors and engage everyone around you in a way that's inviting for them to come in and hear your message, but also tarnishes what society and everything around you, the institutions are that are causing the problem. So one is like Chamber of Commerce. Right? That's a shithole neoliberal idea that local businesses are great. Attack them because they're not great. They waste money. They steer your city council to put shit up like, a tax-free business incubator in which people can generate millions of dollars in revenue and not pay city taxes. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Give away parks so that we can be a pro-business, right? That's all nonsense. Attack that. So grab an issue, read about it, get local, get a message out there, and start hammering people. It also means calling out people's bullshit, right? Just calling it out. And so one of the prime examples is, how do we handle the funding of police in a time in which the police are coming out and basically being the authoritarian arm of whatever cities around them? There is no good example of a good police department. There is not a single example that we can call on that says what police in the 21st century should look like and act like right now in the United States. Every single one of them is a militarized, basically, group, militia.
Intended to serve the interests of whatever municipality they're run by. So this whole idea of acting locally and attacking, the objective is to somehow create a platform by which you can attack and amass soft power locally. A good example of needing to create a platform by which you can attack an existing entrenched power structure is with the police messaging. The correct position is disband the police because they fundamentally serve the municipality's ruling class. And then there's been this introduction of the compromise, which is defund the police. And you have basically the two entrenched political parties saying, no, I want to fund the cops. No, I want to fund the cops more.
I love them more than you do.
So how do you actually alter that line of thinking? And this is kind of the standard power struggle that we keep coming back to, which is you have two political powers, the Dems and the Republicans. They're advocating for thing one and thing two, and you want to go and say, whoa, those are both wrong. We want to do the third thing. Our local concept here is to create a platform by which you can actually start discussing the third bucket. And it starts by attacking bucket one and bucket two. And it's creating power locally so that you can have a voice in future debates.
Yeah, absolutely. It's how do you become that next level? So, you know, we all have our social media accounts. Those don't really work. It really is active engagement. The best thing about city council meetings is they can't really tell you to shut the fuck up. So, you can go there and talk, and when it's your turn, you can call them all assholes if you want to.
I yield my time. Fuck you.
Fuck you, yeah. You guys all fucking suck, right? Because you want to time it out, you practice it, all that fun stuff. So the goal is to be as disruptive as possible because, to be quite honest, a lot of these city council meetings, they never actually have any struggle. Because everybody that shows up to city council meetings tends to be on the docket to have something done for them. You call them out for that. Why don't waste my taxpayer money on that? You make it so hard for the media not to talk about your insanity that it begins to grow and go out. You really want a viral clip is what it comes down to, but it takes activism. It really takes your ability to go out there and press who you are and become like just someone they hate. Do it at the school board meetings. They can't tell you to shut the fuck up. It's a public forum, right? It's all digital now. I mean, they could probably guess mute your mic, but really, there's nothing they can do about it. So just get out there and do it. You can hang flyers in public spaces. You can write chalk on sidewalks. Like, that's the kind of stuff you have to do. You have to make everybody uncomfortable because only through chaos and discomfort will you have change.
The entire premise of acting locally and attacking is to provoke a response. And if you get to the point where the city council people or whatever entity you're attempting to agitate against go to their monthly meeting and they see that you showed up and they have that fear in the pit of their stomach, like, oh shit, I'm gonna have to deal with this asshole.
Yep.
You're winning. You're influencing their consideration. If on the way out, they're gonna have to read, you know, the flyer that you've handed out to everybody in the parking lot or the chalk that you wrote in front of their car or whatever small local action you can take. And the entire premise is that you don't have money to do anything. Printing out flyers is cheap. Chalk is cheap. Showing up and yelling at people during a meeting is cheap.
Yep,
all of this stuff is easily attainable. You don't have to centrally plan. You don't have focus groups that are paid for with, you know, corporate dollars. You don't have access to any of that. You're doing the most economically viable strategy that could potentially yield results by acting locally and attacking.
Because you only have a platform that's local, act locally. Choose to attack with local messaging. Choose to attack the hot button issues that you know your neighbors talk about. And they're too afraid to go out there and do something about. Because it's scarcity, because you don't have that capital, you need to maximize the output of your messaging. And again, that is causing disruption.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.